This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
When bloggers or influencers post their outfit links, 9 times out of 10, I click on it and immediately exit because the price is bananas. It wasn't until recently that I clicked on something expecting it to be the usual out of my price range sweater, and it was under $60 at Quince. Quince has become my ultimate destination for luxury essentials that won't break the bank. Let me tell you about some of the gems I found at Quince. From their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters starting at just $50 to their washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, Quince offers a range of high quality items at prices that are truly within reach. And here's the best part. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Give yourself the luxury you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
So today, we really wanted to talk about the things that you don't want to talk about in therapy.
Because we had put this up on our social media and people had a ton of things to say, right? And we'll go into all those things. But it's something to keep in mind. And I've even done this myself.
I was thinking the same thing. Right? Like, I've done this in my own therapy.
It's the thing that, like, in theory, therapy is supposed to be the place where you can share anything. But it doesn't make us any less fearful, right? So this entire idea of, like, a therapy being a, like, quote-unquote safe space, that's not true. Safety comes from also trust and relationships.
Which takes time. Right? It's hard to just immediately trust someone, even though your therapist, and I am telling you, we have heard it all. Yeah. There are so many clients who are listening who say, this is going to sound crazy, or like, oh my God, like, this might be too much information. I'm like, listen, there is no such thing as too much information.
But I will also say, we've also heard about people that have these experiences where they go and say something to their therapist and they watch their therapist have like a visceral reaction to the entire thing, right? Yes. Like, we've heard this a lot about specifically sex.
Right. Because I think sex has been such a taboo topic. And if therapists aren't trained in it, or they haven't had experience talking about it, that their own personal shit comes up when they're hearing about it from a client. So Emily and I both specialize in sex therapy. In order to do that, we have had to undergo multiple SARs, which is a sexual attitude reassessment.
Yes.
In those SARs, we watch so many different kinds of porn.
Yes. So you sit for 8 hours in 1 day. You do it in 1 day, right? So you sit and go through and like with this group of people and you watch every different type of sexual activity, right? Stuff that it feels like more vanilla, like, you know, heterosexual people having missionary, right? To like way more graphic things of like pee play and of kinks and BDSM and all these different things that maybe you haven't been exposed to because they're not something you do in your own personal life. And that is like a very specific thing. We're also taught about how to physically not react, how to watch our tone of voice. Like, there's a really specific way that you're trained to do it. It's one of my favorite things that, you know, Emily Nagowski we had on in season 1, and she wrote Come As You Are and Burnout, and she's amazing, and she's a sex researcher, and she talks about specifically with Come As You Are that she made sure that she herself narrated the audiobook because they wanted to use like a professional, what's that called? Like a voiceover actor, right?
So they
want to use like a professional voiceover actor, and Emily's like, well, no, because it has to be trained to talk about it in this soothing, calm way.
Because it can be very shaming.
Yes.
Right? Like if you're bringing up something, maybe a kink, right? That, and that.
We're talking about rape fantasy, right? That is a really controversial idea for a lot of people.
So therapists are specifically trained. Sex, you know, if you specialize in sex therapy, we're specifically trained. We have seen it all, right? We've heard it all. And whether it's sex or whether it's another topic, it's something we have really, you know, studied and heard a lot about. And so, but we completely understand how important it is for you to develop trust in your relationship with us in order to feel like you can talk about some of these things. And I think another thing is that when you go into your therapist, you want your therapist to like you.
In general, right? Like, I think we always want someone to like us for the most part, or we want to push them away.
Right.
So you either want to find a reason to not like your therapist because you don't actually want to be doing this. You're not actually comfortable.
It's too vulnerable.
Yes, exactly. Or you really, really, really want them to like you. And so when we do that, when we are like, it's so important for someone to like us, then we don't want to tell about the times where maybe we haven't been our best selves, right? And so what that might mean is, like, if there's times where I'm like really mean to my partner, I don't want to admit that. Like, we have this idea about what it means to be a quote-unquote good person. And when you're so attached to the idea of being a good person, it makes it that you end up having a lot of blind spots.
And I also think this idea of being a good person almost like negates or takes away our ability to be human.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, of course, we're going to be reactive sometimes. Like, of course, we're going to make mistakes. And, you know, we want our therapist to see us as, oh, we're this good person. But listen, we are here to sit with you in all of your humanness, which includes the mistakes you make. And it also, for us to hear those things, it helps us help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So the more vulnerable you can be with us, the more we're able to help you through some of these things. So I think it might be helpful if we go through
some of the stuff people said.
Some of the topics that people said, what, you know, why it's difficult for them. And we could talk about why it might be difficult because we only have a small question box when people fill these out. So one of the things was, my attachment to my mom after the loss of another parent seems embarrassing.
That's interesting, right? That somebody feels that shame, where like for me on a therapeutic perspective, like, it makes a ton of sense,
right?
Of course, especially if there's any type of complex grief, like, it makes a sense that we like highly attach to the person who's left and we really hold on to that. Of course we don't want more loss. Of course we don't want it. It makes a ton of sense to me. And it's interesting, right, to say to yourself, I wonder why that feels so embarrassing to you.
I hear a lot too, like when, as you know, if clients are older and they're like, oh, I lost my mom and that's really, really hard for me. Like, I know that I'm, you know, an adult and I shouldn't feel this way, right? Like, I shouldn't feel that attached. But like, of course you do.
Yeah.
Right? That is a really, really hard loss. It does not matter how old you are, you know, to have that adult figure that you have lost. You're losing part of that attachment.
Yeah.
If you had that attachment with them to begin with.
And I think there's also other people on the flip side of that that would maybe feel like, oh, I pulled away from my remaining parent after I lost one. I had a lot of anger towards them because maybe I was closer with the other parent. I wish it was them. And that's the thing I don't want to admit out loud. Like, we are sometimes these very real human thoughts we have. We have so much shame around them that makes it so difficult, and even in therapy, to bring this up.
And I think the assumption is we're going to shame you too, right? Like, you're already shaming yourself. And so the assumption is if you bring it up in therapy, like, we're going to shame you, right? Like, oh, I can't believe you would have that attachment.
Yeah.
When in reality, we're like, oh, no, that makes sense, right? Which is pretty much our reaction to everything.
Yes, right, because everything does really make sense, right? Like, if you think about the human experience, like, I really get that.
And I think, too, as therapists, I know we've talked about this before, but, like, hearing everyone's stories makes me more comfortable with being human myself.
Well, I mean, that's why we have the best job in the entire world, right? Like, if you take a, like, think about the level of vulnerability we get to sit in all the time, God, it makes you feel so much less alone.
So much less alone, where if I wasn't hearing these stories all the time, I could totally get why it's isolating and why there is so much shame around it, because you're not talking about it and you're worried about how other people might respond to you.
Yeah. So a lot of people, a ton of people wrote in sex. Like, the number one answer we got was sex, right? Sex life, sexual fantasies, sexual fetish. I think these are things that we are worried about talking about because people might think we're weird, or because people have maybe yucked our yum in the past. We'll go into that more. We'll go through some of these other ones. But being depressed, right? Like, how bad it really is. I think especially because there's this other part we're leaving out that is like the mandated reporting part of it, that don't you feel like that because we are mandated reporters, and it's right, so like mandated reporters is like if we report like abuse, but also we have a duty to protect and a duty to warn, right? So a duty to warn is if you come into me, if Jen comes to me and she says I am going to go shoot Cookie Monster, it is like
I
my
I was wondering where you're going with that.
You know, I make don't it a human.
Like the Cookie Monster,
you really hate the Cookie Monster.
I don't think
right?
I would shoot him, but like stop taking the cookies.
Yes, right, it's rude, it's rude, okay,
it's rude.
And we want some but so right, so it would actually be my legal obligation to go warn
the cookie monster.
Right, so we have duty warn and we have duty to protect, which is also if you come in and tell me, hey, I'm thinking about hurting myself and I'm going to go, I already bought a gun yesterday to do that.
I have a plan to do
so. I have a plan to do so, right? So when you go in and talk about suicidal thoughts and or suicidal ideation, that is not a reason for duty to protect, right? You are allowed to go in and talk about that. If there's a furtherance or a plan, if you tell your therapist, well, I've already packaged all the pills away, like done something, that's when we go into a higher mode. But you have to remember there's also like this legal obligation for therapists. And so also sometimes newer therapists will be very uncomfortable with suicidal ideation because it like feels like I have to fix this for you and I have to protect you.
Right.
And so sometimes people don't want to tell you how bad that depression, how bad of a space and dark of a space I'm really in because of like, what are you going to do about it? You're going to tell me I have to go away somewhere. You're going to have to tell me I have to go to the hospital, any of these things.
And it can feel further isolating too, right? Like when you're feeling depressed, it is such an isolating experience and you just want to continue to isolate. And if you don't feel like you can talk to your therapist about some of those dark thoughts, it can feel even more isolating. I think another piece of this too is that a lot of people think about therapy as, okay, I'm going to go to therapy and it's going to be this journey and then I'm going to feel better, right? And so
fixed forever.
Right. And also it's just such a process, and I think some people come into therapy expecting that we're expecting a certain outcome, right? Like if we're working for a certain amount, you know, number of months or years, that you're going to come in and just be like, oh, I'm great. Like, I don't need this anymore. I feel amazing. I will never experience anxiety or depression again. And I think that a piece of it too is that, you know, if you're working for so long with someone and they get a bout of depression, which happens.
Of course.
Because you're life, human.
And life keeps happening.
Life keeps happening. That some will feel like, oh, that this must mean I'm not doing the work, or like I'm not doing a good job in therapy, like almost this needing approval from your therapist. And when you're in a depressed place, you're more likely to be hard on yourself for those things too. So I think that also part of it is like not wanting to admit to your therapist that like, okay, we have used all of these tools and worked on all of these things, but then I have a bout of depression. So it must mean I'm not doing a good job in therapy. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's some shame around that when, listen, we give you so many tools, we can work through depression, but it's going to come up and yeah. Anxiety is going to come up. It's not about it not coming up. It's about how you manage it, how you talk about it, how you keep yourself from isolating in those moments, how you use your tools. But that doesn't mean you're never going to feel depressed and you're never going to feel anxious.
Because you will.
Because you will. That needs to be. It sucks.
And you're allowed, and you can hold the complexities of that, right? You can say, this is so amazing. I'm doing something to heal and I'm doing something to better myself. And you can hold the complexity of, and also this sucks that like life will still be hard, right? Like that it's not perfect and it can be overwhelming.
Because people want us to turn them into robots. I say this to my clients all the time. I'm like, listen, it doesn't matter how long you've been in therapy. You're not going to turn into a robot with no emotions.
Never. It's not going to happen.
Like, I wish we wouldn't have a job.
Do you wish?
No.
No.
But, like, I don't want them to be in pain.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they're struggling. But you're human.
What? Also, the idea of your mood being completely stabilized at all time is, like, that's a myth. And that's not a real thing that could ever happen.
Because then you can't experience the good times, too.
Yes.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready-to-eat meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet, and the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
A lot of people have talked about times that I've lied.
Oh, I wonder if that's in therapy or just in general.
I mean, I think people do lie in therapy.
Let's put a disclaimer. We expect you to lie to us.
We expect you to, I guess we'll say this. I don't necessarily that I know if I expect you to lie, but I definitely expect you to minimize.
Or omit certain things,
right? So like when you give us information, I'm able to sit here and say to myself like, they're talking about this one time. I'm wondering if this has also come up in other ways and how this is like, you're able to, that's the thing about like the study of human behaviors. You're sort of able to predict in certain ways. And so that gives us this better information about like looking at like the full context. So it goes into, yeah, like times that I've lied. Like we're expecting that. We know this is hard.
Yes.
So often people end up telling us huge thing months and months and months or years into therapy. And we're not sitting there at that time and thinking like, I can't believe they didn't tell me the whole time. I think, wow, I'm so glad they told me.
Yes.
I'm so glad that even after all this time, they felt safe enough to come in and there was ability. And safety is created over time with trust and with relationship. It is not automatic. The idea of something being a safe space does not happen immediately.
Right. And we completely, you know, it doesn't mean we don't trust you or like we just completely understand that you have to build a relationship with us in order to be more honest and maybe authentic is a better word, mm-hmm. to be more authentic with everything that's happening for you. We totally get that. Once again, we do not judge you. So whether there's a time you came into therapy and maybe you didn't talk about certain things, but you really feel like not talking about it, like it comes around and you're like, okay, I really wish I talked about that, or I wish I brought that up, but I didn't bring it up, or I bent the truth a little bit because I was uncomfortable. If you come back in and say like, hey, you know, I know a few weeks ago when I said this, this, and this, this other thing also happened and I felt like I really needed to talk about this.
Yeah.
I think the assumption again is like, we're going to shame you.
And I think there's like this assumption that people, once again, this idea of like, I'm the good person or something, right? Like this idea that if I tell them this other part, this is really common, especially when we talk about trauma. If I did anything, if I had drank that night, right? So I'm talking about like sexual trauma, right? So like if I had drank that night, or if I had talked to them first, any of these things, then people feel like, well, so then that means it's my fault. Mm. And that's still not true, even if any of those other things happened. But it's one of the things that makes it complicated, especially when you go into like a legal case of it, is like people will start to admit this out because of their own shame.
Yes.
So if you're thinking right now, listening to this, I want you to ask yourself, what is something I haven't brought up in therapy? What is something I know is a big thing for me that I maybe want space to process and I haven't been comfortable enough to do it? Is it my sexuality? Is it something from my past? Is it my credit card debt, right? Like these different things that we feel like carry a lot of shame for us.
Mm-hmm. And I also think maybe another piece that could come up is how much emotion might be attached to certain things that we keep ourselves from bringing up in therapy. Like, you know, sometimes we're not ready to touch those things.
Yeah.
You know, like they could bring up too much emotion, it would be too vulnerable. Once again, that's why it takes time to build a relationship, mm-hmm. and know that if you get emotional, it's okay. You know, like if it's hard for you, it is our job to hold that space.
And so, okay, so when we say the concept of holding space, what does that mean? Because I feel like that term is used a lot and I don't know if people use it. So let's like talk about what holding space is. Holding space is when we sit there with you in your emotions and we do not try to fix or solve it. Holding space is I'm going to create a space where I try to not use the word safety, right? Like,
right.
Because that's it. That's because
you determine if yes. if the space is safe for
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Right. So holding space is it is my job to sit there with you in whatever's coming up without bringing in my own bias, my own opinion, and my own advice or problem solving.
And I think so often just our society, right? Like whether we're having conversations with family or friends that it's really difficult for people to sit with other people in their negative emotions. And so often we are bringing these things to friends or family and they're trying to solve it, right? They're saying like, oh, well, you know, you have this, you should be grateful, or, oh, it's not that bad. Listen to what happened to me, right?
Yes.
And so often when we bring those things up, because socially it's really uncomfortable and these people aren't trained to sit in yeah. negative emotion, right? And so I think once again we bring that assumption into therapy, like if I bring this up, you know, maybe they're going to try to fix it or give me advice, mm-hmm. or it will be too much for them.
Yeah.
We are so comfortable sitting with negative emotion. Right? Like so comfortable
yes.
with it.
Yes.
And holding that space for you is healing.
Yes, absolutely.
And well, there's nowhere else you're going to get that.
Right. I mean, it's funny, right? Because people will, Jen, we could never even begin to count. If I had a penny for every time somebody was like, I'm sorry, I'm crying. I mean, like
yes.
at this point, I just tell people we can't charge them, or I'm like, oh, I can't charge you if you don't cry, or oh, no, don't worry, we put something in the air, because people, like the amount of people that apologize
always.
For crying in session, I'm like, this is literally what you're supposed to be doing. It's not a problem.
Yes.
But I think also we know in couples therapy, a lot of times people do not want to let their anger out. So people are like so worried about like looking like the bad one, quote unquote, that they like aren't being authentic and
yes.
talking about like anger is a very valid, legit emotion. It
yes.
is okay to show your anger in therapy. And I think another thing people don't talk about is like when they have an issue with their therapist, like if they're angry or upset with their own therapist,
yes.
people are like scared to bring it up.
We want you to tell us.
Yes, we do.
If you are pissed at us about something, that we said maybe.
Yeah.
Listen, we're also human.
Yes, we make mistakes all the time.
We make mistakes. We might, maybe we worded something in a way that, you know, wasn't helpful, off-putting for you. It is so important for us that we have the opportunity to repair that.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel comfortable with that,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, this is about you and what you need in therapy. And so if you bring that to us, it's really, we are so ready to talk you through that, repair that for you, apologize if we did mm-hmm. something that hurt you. We want you to feel like, once again, that we're creating a space that feels safe for you to determine. I use the word safe again.
I know. It's hard.
It's hard.
Yes. Yeah. Because that's what we want, right? Our ultimate goal is for you to feel safe. And we try to create that the best we possibly can. And it doesn't always happen, right? Like, and there's also a certain part that...
All right. Let's just... I don't know if we're going to edit this out or not, but Emily... just kicked over our pompous grass.
A huge glass vase.
We just got attacked.
Yeah, I feel like we shouldn't even edit out. That's just funny.
Let's keep it in.
We should probably also talk about, like, Jen and I are having, like, such a difficult day.
Really?
Like, there was issues with the fucking mic. Oh, there was issues with anything. That's, you want to talk about the stuff you don't want to say. When you get on a podcast, you want to act like we're so in a great place today.
We've got it together.
We've so got it together. And, like, we're a mess. We do not. We're a mess half the time. We couldn't figure out sound today.
I said to Emily before this, I was like, listen, as soon as we start, we're going to start feeling better. I do, though.
Yes, no, I automatically do. But it's even funny that, like, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, you want to pretend like everything's fine.
It's not. Do you know how long it took us to get these mics together? I had to turn into an audio technician.
We're therapists, not sound engineers. Right. God damn it. Somebody help us.
I don't get it.
So, man,
I had to learn
man.
So many things.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks. Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
I think that's the thing, right? And okay, so I'll say this. So Jen, if you sit here and think about, like, what's the stuff you keep from your therapist? For me, there is a part of being a therapist and going to therapy where it feels like you have to have it together.
Yes.
Like you have to, especially like in your, especially as couples therapists, like it feels like you're supposed to like, I don't know, have this like
perfect
ideal
relationship.
Yes, right. Like people say that to me all the time. How many times do clients ask you that? Like, oh, your relationship must be so good.
I'm like
that's my, I'm like, okay. It's just a relationship. All relationships are hard. So we work really hard. It's probably is a lot better than some people that are not working at all in their relationship, I would say, right? We report a pretty
high. Or avoiding.
High. Yes, exactly. But even when I go to therapy, there's like certain stuff that feels difficult saying to my therapist.
Is there anything specific you want to share with the group?
Well, I think I talked about it. I talked about one of the episodes that there was a time that we got really, really negative feedback on social media, Instagram live that we did. And this person, like, it was clearly their own shit, made it very personal about us. And there was a part of me that was like worried to bring it up in therapy because I didn't want my therapist to think like I was being a bad therapist, like out in the world. And so I said that to my therapist. I was like, listen, and what I know is that if there is something in my head before a session, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to tell her that. I know I have to tell her that. So like, that's my indicator.
That's such a good point. And that's also something to consider for yourself, right? Because I have that same thing before going into therapy. I'm like, oh, what should I talk about? And like one thing pops up and I'm like, oh, I don't really feel like. Mine's more like if there's more emotion attached and I'm not ready to go there.
Yes. That you want to avoid it, right?
I want to avoid it. Yeah, that takes me time.
Well, like in the words of my therapist, she always says to me, Emily, you love talking, but you hate vulnerability.
Oof, wow.
Which is
she
true.
She is good.
Which is true. I do love talking and I do hate vulnerability. So those things do exist together.
I don't like talking or vulnerability. So
you want to be a potato.
I just would like to sleep.
You would just like to be,
sleep and be a hermit. Yes, that would absolutely be ideal. But that's, I think that's something to ask yourself is like, what are the things that you're thinking about? And that's why a lot of the time when you're in therapy, and we've experienced this many times, clients will bring something up in the last like 5 minutes
always
of therapy.
It's called the doorknob.
The doorknob, right?
The doorknob, right? The doorknob disclosure, which is that like people are grabbing for the doorknob and they're like, oh, and by the way, I was abused my whole life by my uncle. And you're like, great, see you next week. Like, it's this thing that like it is such a subconscious like response for safety. But half the fucking shit we do is self-protective.
Absolutely.
This entire thing we're talking about of like not bringing stuff to therapy, it's because of self-protection.
Right. There's a fear. But but that's where the healing can happen, right? Because we like to think about your relationship with your therapist. The more you build on that, the more you learn to trust them. It's something, that model of relationships is something that you can take into the world and apply to other relationships, right? So like Emily and I, for example, have trouble being vulnerable, right? So the more we work on being vulnerable with our therapists, the more we can take that into our relationships in the world, right? So that's kind of the key there is the more that you ask yourself, well, like, what am I having trouble with bringing into therapy? Like, what's too vulnerable for me? And you allow yourself to go there and you get a response from your therapist where they are loving, they're there for you, they're holding space for you.
Or if that doesn't happen,
that
right?
Can be
that also, but it also gives you a lot of information, right? Like if that person says nothing back, then you might leave that session with one. If you have the feeling like I'm never going back to that again, something happened, something was triggered for you, right?
Yep.
Or if you like, I shouldn't have said that. That was a big mistake. And you have like what we call is like a vulnerability hangover. That also is a lot of information. Why was that so comfortable? What's the fear of what happens next? It is not uncommon for someone to do a huge disclosure and then cancel their next session.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Try to avoid. And then when they come back for the time after that, there's always another crisis or something going on so they can avoid the thing they talked about before. Like that's very like common.
And we don't fault you for that.
No, it's reasonable.
It's reasonable. We totally get it. And that's another reason why therapy is such a process, is we kind of go in and out of, okay, I'm going to allow myself to be vulnerable and now I'm going to pull back. I'm going to allow myself to be vulnerable and now I'm going to pull back.
And isn't that relationships? That's the dance, right?
Yes, that is the dance.
Right? That's that we step together, we step apart, I step on your foot, I knock a massive glass over. You know, there's just like, these are all the different things that occur in difficult relationships.
So another one that I definitely want to bring up, and I know we've talked about it on the podcast, but it's such, I think it's one that like we need to highlight, is talking negatively about my parents.
Yeah, people have like such a loyalty. Like they feel, I think people's fear is that if they start talking about their parents, then the therapists are going to think badly about their parents or judge them. But for what we know specifically, and this is why we love MFT so much, is because we're able to look at the intergenerational patterns of, like, if you were to say yourself, if my parents had the parents that they needed, how would they have been able to parent me differently? It's intergenerational. Something happened. And oftentimes we'll have someone say, like, well, my grandparents were so amazing to me, but, you know, my mom had this bad relationship. Well, your grandparents may be amazing to me, but maybe weren't able to parent your parents the way they needed.
Right.
And so there's a way that when you talk about it, and that's the great thing about MFTs, is we're able to do those 3-4 generations back to understand what is the intergenerational transmission process here of why your parent wasn't able to provide some type of care for you in that way.
And so that being able to think in that context allows us to help you be able to think through these patterns, but also gain empathy towards, like, your parents' situation, right? We are not trying to target your parent and say, oh, they were bad, right? Like, isn't that the joke? Like, oh, you're going to therapy to, like, blame everything on your mom.
Yeah.
But that is not our goal.
No.
Right?
Like, our goal is to look at it, but also then look at your parents' experience.
Yes. So that you can feel your feelings, right? Like, you can experience the feelings that you have, or maybe dig into some of the things that you needed that you didn't get growing up. But it doesn't mean that comes with targeting your parents, mm-hmm. right? Like, both things can be true.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about sex.
Okay. I'm ready.
Because everyone wrote it about it.
So many people wrote in about sex.
I couldn't believe how many people wrote in about they could never talk about sex in therapy, which also worries me because it makes me think the therapists aren't asking about sex.
So I also, another therapist wrote in saying, like, how do I bring up with my client? Like, how do I let them know that, like, I'm comfortable talking about sex?
I mean, I would simply ask the question, are you happy with your physical intimacy with yourself or in your relationships? Mm-hmm. How has your experience with sex been? How'd you learn about sex, right? Like, you know, when you start to talk about it, like, even if sometimes for therapists, it's easier to start in childhood. Well, like, how'd you learn about puberty? How'd you learn about sex? Or how'd you learn about, you know, were you taught abstinence only, safe sex, right? So, like, when you start it from that more logical, like, a little bit, like, few things out, then it's easier to come in and say it together and make it a little bit more personal and real. But I think, you know, if you bring up sex to your clinician and you feel that there's a discomfort, you also are allowed to directly ask, hey, are you comfortable? Is this a safe space? is this a safe space to talk about sex? Is that, like, something that works here? And hopefully your clinician is able to be honest and real with themselves that they can say yes or no to that. And we've had people that reach out to us that say, like, oh, I'm seeing a couples therapist, but they don't do sex therapy. And right. So they want to come in and do sex therapy with you. You know, it's actually insane that not every couples therapist does sex.
I know.
And also every therapist, sexuality is a part of our lives.
Absolutely.
And if you even think about, postpartum care and the importance of masturbation, if you think about body image, the importance of masturbation and guided imagery, right? There's so many different things that impact our lives, like sex.
Yes.
It's wild that people don't talk about it, but I also understand it's just not something that everyone's trained in. It isn't the norm.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes when I, you know, if I ask my clients about sex in therapy and they're seemingly uncomfortable with it, or they want to talk about it, but there's still a discomfort that's coming up for them, I'll be like, oh, like, penis, vagina. Like, if you just start saying, you know, like,
yes,
any sort of sexual terms, they become more comfortable.
Yes. Yeah. And I think there's, like, this part that I always remind people, like, in sessions, like, listen, like, I talk about sex as part of my job. Right. This is very normal. This is, for me, it's like saying, like, how's the weather? Or, like, how's your sex life? Right. So if I'm ever making you uncomfortable, let me know.
Absolutely.
Like if, or if there's a term, if you're not comfortable with the terms penis and vagina, I'm going to use the words you want to use, right?
Right.
That's one of the things you're taught when you're taught to be a sex therapist is how to enter in and meet clients where they're at.
Right. Tell us what you're comfortable yes. with.
So I think that's the thing. I want to be realistic. I don't want to sit here and say to people, like, you should talk to your therapist about sex, because it isn't actually safe for everyone to mm-hmm. do that. So first, I would say, what would that be like to bring up? And you can now use this episode.
Yes.
Yes. Hey, I was listening to this episode of these two very annoying therapists who always want to talk about everything. And they brought out about like stuff. And I noticed that we'd never talk about sex. Is that something you do in your practice? Right. Like, you can now use this episode as an example of how to intro that conversation.
Another, you know, thing I was thinking as you're talking is like sometimes, you know, in order to improve our sexual relationships in our, you know, communication in our sexual relationships, sometimes we need to practice talking about sex ourselves, or like talking about what we like during sex.
Yeah. It brings up, you know, what Dr. Kristen Mark said a few episodes ago when she said, you know, it's such a stale thing when people are like, what's the answer to good sex, and it's communication. And she's like, yeah, but like I'll stop giving that answer when people start actually doing it.
Exactly. So like you can practice talking about sex in therapy if you have this conversation with your therapist and it's something that they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I have done that with multiple clients to like help them feel more comfortable talking about sex.
Yes.
Which they once again can take into their relationship in order to communicate what they like, what they don't mm-hmm. like, you know, to be more open so that they can better their sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be like, I've had many clients that come in, especially people that grew up in a lot of purity culture it was really taught to not talk about sex. And this is something that's reserved for marriage, right? So there's so much shame around sex. And so sometimes it's a slower process to talk about. Like a client will bring it up 1 week and then they have to take a break from it the next week, right? So it's something I keep in the back of my mind to revisit. But if your therapist is maybe getting sidetracked with other stuff, you can bring that up.
I always say at the beginning when I first start with a client that if there's anything that we're talking about and you're like, I wanted to talk about something different,
yeah.
you can say that in the middle of us talking.
Interrupt me.
Interrupt. This is Fuck your yeah. time.
Yes.
Like, interrupt me. You tell me what you want to talk about. There will never be a time where I'm like, oh, no, we have to stick on this topic.
But there might be a time where we see something like, hey, I noticed that you only want to talk about your dog, but you've been avoiding your suicidal thoughts. You know, right. could there be a way that, you know, let's bring that to the session, right? We can bring it and we can look at it in that way of like, hey, I'm noticing this thing. Do you think maybe you're avoiding thinking about your thoughts and you're just focusing on the dog here?
And you might say like, yes, like, yes, I am. I am just focusing on my dog. It makes me feel better. I'm not ready to talk about those thoughts. And we'll say, okay, you know, are you comfortable with me bringing that up from time mm-hmm. to time,
yeah.
right? To like almost ask you for permission to bring attention yeah. to those things that maybe you're avoiding.
And when we talk about this, though, we're talking about outpatient therapy. When you go to a specific, very specific thing, EMDR, DBT, you're in like an intensive OCD training thing, then I think it is a little bit different, right? Because they're following a different type of treatment plan. So that's like something to keep in mind about like what kind of therapy like does your clinician provide. But I think that it can all relate. I would hope that in the therapeutic relationship, there's space for everything.
There's another one I wanted to bring up. Yes. Are we ready for it? Just because I thought it was funny. Calling my therapist out, in parentheses, randomly brings up their dog.
Are these our clients?
I was just going to say, are they talking about me?
I think...
call your therapist out.
Yeah, you can call them out. Are they asking for how to do that? Is that the question? Is like,
I'm not sure, because once again, the question box was so small, so we have to assume. But
that what would you say if you were going to call your therapist out?
I'd be like, hey, like... hey, like, here's the problem I'm having. Like, I would love to hear about my therapist dog.
Yes, but you would, because you would like to avoid.
I would love to avoid and not be vulnerable. But I think if my therapist was like constantly bringing up their dog in the middle of something, I'd be like, hey, listen, you know, I love dogs and I love hearing about your dog, but I know we only have a limited amount of time. Do you mind if we focus on this topic?
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
I think there's also one of the things that I've done is to say, like, if that feels too uncomfortable, like if that feels too vulnerable, you can also make it about something else. Like, you can say something along the lines of, like, no, in therapy with my previous therapist before, they would always sort of talk about themselves. So that's actually a trigger for me. Like,
that's good.
Right. So for me, because that's actually something that has happened to me. So, like, with my therapist now, in our first session, I say, you know, here's what has worked for me in the past. Here's what hasn't worked for me. And when you're able to say, because some people want to know about it. It's like, some people like, I want to hear about your dog. And like, I really hate that this is a one-sided relationship and they're looking for something more. And that's the cool part about being able to say, like, hey, listen, like, here's what works and here doesn't. Because as you guys know, if you know yourself, you grow yourself.
There you go. We got to put it in every episode.
It has to. So, hey, dear Evan Jen.
Dear Em and Jen, do you want me to read it this time?
I would love that.
Dear Em and Jen, my 20-year-old sister is in her first serious relationship and my family hates the guy. He's not a terrible person, but he's not very driven, didn't vote, didn't get vaccinated, dropped out of college, and is a bit arrogant. It's not just my immediate family that can't stand him, but my extended family as well. My mom hasn't been totally honest with my sister about how much we all dislike this guy because my mom is worried about driving my sister away. She's the younger one. I'm the older one. So she's my mom's baby. How do we confront my sister about this?
So, here's the issue with here, Em and Jim, is they're not going to like our replies.
I know. It's okay. That's all right.
So
they're asking for a reason.
Okay, yeah. How do you confront your sister about this? Hey, if you want me to directly answer that question, I would simply go to my sister and say, hey, tell me about the things that you like about this. Is it a male? Do mm-hmm. we know? Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me things that you like about boyfriend. We're going to call him Mike for this.
Yeah,
tell me about, like, tell me about your relationship with Mike. What does he do for you? Maybe there's parts that you don't know. Right? Like, that's the thing. Is like, so you see from the outside, oh, he's not driven or he's not this stuff. But maybe there's something that's incredibly meaningful for him in the relationship or for her, right? He's the first person that has made me feel safe. He really gets me. He makes me laugh. There's all this other stuff. So first I would ask before I confront.
Because I think that confronting can isolate the person.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Of course, if they're in an abusive relationship,
it's totally different. It's
completely
not
different.
Yeah.
But people really have to figure things out on their own.
Yeah.
Right? And so if we start inserting our opinion, mm-hmm. If we push our opinions onto others or say, oh my God, you should break up with that person.
Yeah.
Right? Then we're inserting our own kind of feelings about it as opposed to letting them go through it on their own.
Well, and let's say you open and have this conversation with your sister and she's like, you know what? We're having a great time. He's not for now, but he's great and we're having a good time and like this is how it is. Cool.
Great.
Right? Like if somebody like directly knows that. So like ask people. Right? Make it safe enough for there to be. And the reason this is
create safety.
But also like the reason this is important is because if there is a problem, you want them to be able to come to you.
Right.
So you can be honest and say like, hey, like just, so you know, like I think that you deserve someone who's more motivated. But if you're with him and you're happy, that's great.
That is all that matters.
Right. It's we've talked about on the show before. It's a
I'm ready. I'm so ready. Such anticipation here.
It's stroke, kick.
Oh, right.
Right? I love you. I'm so happy that you're content. And I just want to make sure you're with someone who brings out the best in you when you motivate each other.
And I'm here if you ever need anything.
That's a stroke, and a kick.
That's our episode.
That's it. We love it.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
If this episode was helpful for you or you think it'd be helpful for a friend, send it on over to them. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. We love you.
Hey guys, I'm Alana Dunn, and I'm the host of Seeing Other People. As an early Hinge employee, a modern dater, and now a fiancé, I know the dating world maybe a little too intimately. I'm here to make you feel less alone in your dating journey, whatever it may look like. Don't have a date for tonight? No problem. Whether you're looking for love or just want to laugh and commiserate with others, tune in to Seeing Other People as we explore the roller coaster that is the ever-evolving world of dating.